Hi, everybody. Marco Werman here. Before we get into the show, I've got some exciting news to share. The world is participating in Newsmatch. From now until the end of the year, every dollar donated to the world will be matched. This means that a gift of $50 will actually provide $100 of support to our work here at The World. If you have ever considered giving to The World, today is the day to take intention and turn it into action, one that we will be deeply grateful for. Every day, The World crosses borders and time zones to bring you stories that matter. As a nonprofit newsroom, we rely on contributions from listeners like you to keep our reporting free and accessible to all. With Newsmatch, you can double your impact. It takes a lot to keep the world spinning, and we cannot do it without you. Head to theworld.org/give to donate today. From everybody here at The World, thank you.
Heads up, fans of The World. We're putting a little something extra in your feed. Things That Go Boom, a bonus podcast to loyal listeners of The World from PRX. Things That Go Boom. Let's roll.
The question is, do you feel safe?
Do I feel safe?
Do I feel safe?
No. You know? No, I don't feel safe.
Automatically, it makes me think of the recent pandemic. At the beginning of that, I did feel a certain protection, focusing more on home life and family and the slowness of it. As it continues, I guess I feel less safe, and that's just because I don't like going out into the world right now with this new normal.
The fear of catching that disease, certainly the fear of my family and those I love catching that, it weighs on my mind heavily.
I feel unsafe for children. For children being born into societies where us and them is the norm, not us together.
I sit in my house and I look outside and I see this beautiful neighborhood. And then I see what's happening in the rest of the country. And, you know, frankly, it's a terrifying time. And I'm raising two kids. And I think one of my biggest fears is what country will be left for them.
So much division in our country. And I feel like there's maybe an impending civil war. I hope it's not true. It's just frightening.
Yeah, I have four brothers who are black men, and they're roaming around the world in the same way everybody else is. And they're amazing young men, and I fear for their lives in ways that I've never feared before.
So no, I don't feel safe now unless we wake up.
Hi. It's Lacey. A couple of weeks ago here on Things That Go Boom, we put out a call. We asked you, our listeners, our friends, our family, to tell us the answer to what might seem like a pretty simple question. How safe do you feel? And I'm going to be really honest. This year has made me pretty scared, and I know you're all scared. I also know that even in a good year, this show makes you all pretty anxious. So when we asked, we wanted you to come back and tell us the truth, but we also wanted to offer up some help from our little corner, however we could. And I'll admit that my own personal 2020 coping strategy, at least the best one I've found so far, besides drinking a lot, has been to watch a whole lot of really kind television. Stuff like Schitt's Creek and Ted Lasso, to escape into a world that's just a little bit nicer. And all I really wanted for this episode was to do that for you all. To give you something kind, something hopeful, and something to make you feel a little less afraid. But that's where it all fell apart. Because this is a show about national security. And national security stuff is actually really, really scary most of the time. And just averting our eyes? I'm not actually sure, after trying and failing to write a really, truly hopeful episode, that that's the right move. So on this episode, the first of our brand new season 4. What we really want to do instead, in the wake of our recent election, is talk about the connection between fear and violence, and how we and the people we choose to lead us through that fear can do better. I'm Lacey Healy, and this is Things That Go Boom. In an effort to get to the root of why we're all feeling the way that we are, the first thing we did was probably something we should have done a long time ago. We reached out to a psychiatrist, Dr. Arash Jamambakht, who, and this is important, has a giant famous dog.
He's a great Pyrenees, Jasper. You just Google Jasper Ann Arbor, you will see all articles about this guy just because he's handsome.
While Jasper basks in all the glory, Arash spends his time talking a lot of people down. He specializes in anxiety and trauma. And he told us that there are a lot of reasons for this fear that we're all feeling, but the biggest one is just our body doing its job.
When it goes to the biology, most of what happens is in the temporal lobe, like right above our ears, where there is this little piece of the brain called the amygdala, this little round part of the brain. Amygdala's job is anytime I'm exposed to a cue in my environment, amygdala decides whether I should eat it, have sex with it, run away from it, or attack it. Basically, salience detection at a very primitive animal level.
When the amygdala detects a threat, it sounds something like a smoke alarm in your brain and kicks off a whole series of other responses inside your body.
My heart starts pounding, hands get sweaty, attention shifts, the motor system gets ready for fight and flight, basically pumping blood to the organs which are vital for those functions.
There are parts of the brain that help to process your fear, kind of like a little fire department swooping in to tell you to chill out. It's just the neighbor burning his barbecue again. But sometimes when they show up, you're already out on the street in your underwear waiting for the house to burn down.
Fear is not logical. We have a logical way of thinking, which is slower and which is like more objective, and then there's fear. Fear is very fast.
Very fast. But when fear results in trauma, it can also last a very, very long time.
We know trauma can cause changes in the brain, in the biology of the brain, and even in epigenetic changes. We have intergenerational transfer of trauma. Researchers have seen fear-related behaviors in children of survivors of Holocaust, whether it's learned from parents and grandparents through observation or genetic.
Arash says that these days, most of his patients are stressed about two things, politics and the pandemic.
There are a few aspects of environment that make it more stressful and more scary. One is lack of control. When we feel we do not have control on what's happening around us, that is very stressful and causes a lot of fear. And one of the examples is the pandemic, because we do not have much control over this. Not only as a person I don't, but also as a whole group, humanity or my country doesn't have much control over it.
So we do what humans have always done. We turn to each other for information, to learn what's safe and what's not.
50,000 years ago, if the elders of the tribe or my parents told me, don't go to that part of the woods because a couple of us went there and never came back, well, it would make sense for me to be afraid of that area of the woods. And so we learn from each other.
Except in the 21st century, each other is often the media. And when we're scared, we tend to spend a whole lot of extra time with the media, obsessing over what might happen next.
We're constantly screening for danger. And one of the things that we constantly are checking all these social media and TV and things is that, okay, what's the next dangerous, threatening thing is coming to us?
So the role that all that media plays in creating fear, it's intensified.
You open CNN, you open Fox News, all you hear is one story for 24-hour day until the next story comes in the next story.
Facebook decided to take down conspiracy theories pushed by the online movement known as QAnon.
Began posting tangled clues on internet messages.
Is the idea that Donald Trump is fighting and winning a war against
a group of Satan-worshipping, child sex trafficking, A-list celebrities and politicians are trying to secretly overthrow President Trump.
I know nothing about it. I do know they are very much against pedophilia.
I'm afraid that we're on the cusp of a new generation of exploitation.
is kind of a reality show disaster pornography. That's what I call it. But then that can also be manipulated and abused because we have this inherent tendency to trust our tribe mates when it comes to fear.
And in addition to helping spread misinformation, the media silos we sort ourselves into can deepen our divide.
We are tribal creatures. It shows itself in all these different forms, right? We have nationalities. We have groups of people. We stick to one football team, even if that football team is the one that loses every year, right? And we never give up.
We have our churches, our neighborhoods, our political parties.
And we are given values. We are given morals. We are given rights and wrongs. We are given laws that we accept as laws because our tribe mates told us that, or that was what we were raised with.
When we feel a threat to our tribe, we hunker down deeper within it.
And the more secluded these tribes are from each other, the more we trust what is given to us as information about the others or about the other tribes.
Generations of humans have dehumanized the other. And even beyond the current president's own dehumanizing language, our military engages in a form of this day-to-day. Counterforce and countervalue attacks, collateral damage, surgical strikes. The gender researcher Carol Cohn has said that somehow it seems to be forgotten that even scalpels spill blood. But when we dehumanize the other, it suddenly becomes a lot easier to think of them as a danger to our tribe.
They're coming for us. They're coming for our resources. They're coming for our kids. They're coming for our jobs. They're coming for our lives. They're coming for our even culture. They're coming to take away my culture from me.
Fear is so primitive and so strong within us that it alone can lead us to violence.
Aggression is the other side of fear. What's the function of fear? Protecting us from destruction of me, destruction of my gene pool and my tribe's gene pool. So we won't see anything other than the immediate threat or what is sold to us as a threat. So we can easily turn to aggression.
And from there, it can very easily escalate into something devastating, even deadly.
Then we turn to stupid weapons and we are ready and willing to go destroy them, whether that destruction is in the form of the worst form, killing a person, or destroying their temples, or destroying them over social media.
Bro, you got him down, man. Let him breathe, least, man.
How much have, throughout the history, we killed brutally, heartlessly other humans just for the sake of tribalism and nationalism or religion?
So here we are in 2020, and it feels like fear is all around.
Stand back and stand by, but I'll tell you.
Inside this old warehouse in South Texas, the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol is keeping hundreds of immigrant children in cages created by metal fencing.
When we come back, we'll talk about what it means to lead a terrified country away from violence. During his 1912 campaign, Woodrow Wilson promised to, quote, new freedom for the black voters that helped elect him to office.
It's made up of several elements.
But all that turned around pretty fast.
It's made up of three elements in particular.
In the first weeks of his presidency, he gave in to pressure from cabinet members to resegregate the federal government. And after facing opposition from the Senate, he began to fill key appointments with white men, even nominating a white man to be ambassador to Haiti. The country probably should have seen it coming, though. Born in Virginia and raised in Georgia and South Carolina, Wilson had actually written previously in support of the KKK. And he'd also written against black suffrage on the grounds that the dominance of an ignorant and inferior race was justly dreaded. By Wilson's second term, the country was at war with Germany. And in an effort to unite the country around the war effort, Wilson actually embarked on a campaign of propaganda, intimidation, and outright suppression of newspapers that opposed the war. Eventually, the 1918 Sedition Act made it a crime to say anything the government perceived as harmful to the country or the war effort, effectively muzzling the press. When the pandemic, widely known as the Spanish flu, began to spread inside the U.S., doctors tried to use the press to warn citizens that it was dangerous. but newspaper editors, maybe fearful of the repercussions, refused to run articles or print their letters. Throughout the course of the pandemic, Wilson never, not even once, publicly acknowledged the disease, not even when he himself came down with the flu. As a result, city and county officials were left to make their own decisions about when to close schools, stop travel, and forbid public gatherings. Cities that passed mask ordinances struggled to enforce them. So they started doling out punishments to so-called mask slackers. Things like fines, prison sentences, and public shaming, like having your name printed in the paper. In one incident that resulted from all of this, a local health officer in San Francisco named Henry D. Miller actually shot a man in front of a downtown drugstore after the man refused to put on a mask. In the struggle, Miller also shot two innocent bystanders. They all survived, but the incident should give you a sense of just how tense things were. When black soldiers came back from the war, they returned to a country ravaged by the pandemic and, in many ways, a country more segregated than the one that they left. Lynchings and Jim Crow laws were rampant, and in the summer of 1919, just after the third wave of the flu swept the country, race riots broke out in Chicago, D.C., and at least 24 other cities. Hundreds died. The riots didn't lead to any sweeping change, but they did mark the beginning of a growing willingness among Black Americans to fight for their rights, as more light shone on the oppression and injustice of Jim Crow laws that had been racking the Black community for decades. When I started looking into past examples of failure of leadership, times when our leaders have allowed fear to get the best of them or just have been absent in times of crisis, you guys, I almost skipped right over the Spanish flu because it just seemed a little too obvious. But when I did start doing a little digging, well, nobody's been shot for refusing to wear a mask, but the number of parallels between these two moments, separated by a century, are certainly notable. This summer, our country's history of inequality reached another inflection point. Bumia Kinasotu, who also hosts the podcast What in the World, lives in D.C. And what she experienced in the weeks after George Floyd was killed made her feel something she never thought she would, at least in America.
It was in June, during the thick of the George Floyd protests here in Washington, D.C., where I live, and the first or second day of protests were really intense here in the city with helicopters, choppers coming around all throughout the entire day and into the night, sirens going off every single day. So all of the sort of emergency noises that you can think of, we heard, and in the evening was when I felt the most afraid. And I just got this thought in my mind that perhaps at any moment the president could call any one of our military branches to basically bomb the city. I just felt completely like not in control, not safe, and thought that he could tell the military to bomb us and that would be the end of it and I would be the first to go and there would be nowhere to escape to. So I packed my bags and I left the city to the suburbs of Virginia, deep into Virginia, to stay with a friend and her family until things cooled off in the city. And I never felt that unsafe in my entire life living in America, born and raised here. But for the first time, I understood what people in other countries felt like when the United States was present, our military was present. And just having a glimpse of that, it scared the shit out of me. I respect our military, but I don't want to fear them.
Bumi's fear wasn't just her amygdala flipping out over nothing. Just across town from her apartment, about 3 hours after federal police in riot gear dispersed peaceful protesters near the White House with tear gas, a Black Hawk swept low over Chinatown, creating winds equivalent to a tropical storm. Experts describe the maneuver as a show of force, one more commonly used to disperse civilians in war zones. A tactical use of fear. And a pretty good illustration of the choice we have before us. our leaders can choose to be more transparent, to empower their citizens and to lead us toward greater empathy and change. Or they can choose to lead through intimidation, denial, and blame. As we were writing this episode, helicopters were circling again in D.C. And businesses across downtown were nailing plywood across their storefronts in anticipation of a breaking point. Today, we have a new president-elect. We have the first Black, the first Asian, the first female vice president-elect. But we are not free from our fear. And where we go next will depend in no small part on where our leaders take us. The next administration will have to make a series of immediate choices inside our country and out on how to lead us through this moment of deep division. And just like the rest of us, they will have to resist their deep biological urge to make those decisions based in fear.
Leaders, particularly presidential leaders, we say don't have a say-so in our day-to-day lives. But the reality is that presidents are elected for a reason. Presidents are supposed to protect in this country. And I think presidents are supposed to embody the values that we hold dear and to do what's best for the country, for all of its people.
So in this time of fear and anxiety, of uncertainty and unrest, what might make us feel safer?
Nothing profound. The first is to finally get rid of COVID, get back to dealing with some of the systemic issues we have with police brutality, and getting, you know, our country back together, just getting our country back together.
And there is hope.
Hope in the sense of this will sometime end and we can move on with our lives into a normal instead of a new normal.
We need to get curious and care about others and try to create a bridge.
Giving back to the community, taking care of each other and the world that we live in.
So we do our best to make things go well. We do our best to make people have good lives, be healthy, be happy.
So long as we can utilize our own fear, then we can actually turn it into energy and motivation that helps us try to change things and create a positivity.
It's really up to each individual person to make an effort.
But it takes work, not guilt, and not us and them. And it really takes some compassion for ourselves.
Even amongst our differences, human interaction is so important. Because that's what ultimately keeps us alive.
Things That Go Boom is produced by Inkstick Media and distributed by PRX. This episode was produced by Marin Lazian and me, and edited by Ruth Morris and John Barth. Darian Shulman is the incredible composer behind our show's music, and Robin Wise makes everything sound shiny and new. Thank you, as always, to the foundations that make our work possible, the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Plowshares Fund, as well as Inkstick supporters, including the Cologne Foundation, Craig Newmark Foundation, Prospect Hill Foundation, and the Jubitz Family Foundation. And thank you so much to all of you who responded to our call-out this week, especially Bumia Kinesotu, who you heard a lot from today. If you want to hear more, head over to our show, What in the World, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to hear more from us, come visit us on social at Inkstick Media for a look at the rest of the work that we do. Hang in there. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Let's say I am attacked by a pit bull when I'm a kid and I become afraid of all kinds of dogs, including Shih Tzus. Or I can become afraid of all animals, right?
We did hear your dog. It was as if on cue. From PRX.
from PRX.